Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And Ken, I have a prediction for you.
No more podcasts?
In this short period of time between now and November 4th, the election, I predict we will see at least one poll showing John McCain ahead again.
Wow.
I believe that will happen. Do I believe that John McCain will be ahead? Or do I believe that that poll will be measuring some substantial tightening of the race? Not necessarily. But I think we'll see at least one poll that says John McCain is ahead again.
Well, while all of America does listen to this podcast and few people listen to Talk of the Nation, but this week on Talk of the Nation...
An NPR program that runs on the radio.
Which Ken Rudin was on Wednesday. Vin Weber says he doesn't know if he believes it, but he saw a poll today that had McCain within 2 points.
Yes. There were actually two polls that were within that range. One came from the GWU Battleground poll, which, by the way, was the last poll to show Barack Obama going ahead. Uh-huh. Another poll done by AP and done by an offshoot of the Roper Organization, as best I can tell, had the race at 1 point.
Well, yeah, but they had Chuck Baldwin leading.
Yeah, and another thing about that particular poll that came out with a 1 percentage point margin among likely voters, inside the poll you discover that the margin among all registered voters that they polled was 10 points. Exactly the same thing that NBC and the Wall Street Journal reported in the Wall Street
but
Journal.
But likely much, much closer.
Oh, virtually tied.
Is Mr. McCain's argument about taxes working? Or is it my theory that I think that the people who are undecided are really McCain voters?
I do, too. I think most of the undecided are people who are not particularly happy about either of the candidates, but who are probably less happy about Barack Obama.
I agree.
And so if they vote at all, which is the big question, they will either go third party or they will go to John McCain.
I don't think anybody's voting third party.
I think we'll see 2 to 3 percentage points for the combined three parties.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
And maybe four. And that could be where the undecideds wind up.
But I guess in a close election, the real question is whether Ralph Nader will get enough votes to hurt Bob Barr's chances.
No, I think Bob Barr and Cynthia McKinney are locked in a real battle to see which of them
comes closest
to Ralph Nader.
Who wins Georgia.
No, I do believe, though, that we will see a closer election than some people have been predicting, and that while it may be overwhelming in the House and Senate races, it may be a huge Democratic year everywhere else, that the presidential race is a special and that this is an unlike any other matchup. And race is obviously a huge factor here. But beyond that, if you argue, and I would argue, that this is still a kind of center-right country that finds itself in an economic crisis, finds itself approving of the government taking a larger and larger regulatory role. And
upset with the war, upset with rising
banks,
prices.
Upset with all of that. So it's kind of a 1932 sort of a moment, and that comparison has obviously been made. Yet, people stop at the brink and they say, we're going to have a Democratic Congress, we're going to be very liberal. I'm afraid that this guy, Barack Obama, I don't know very much about him, he's going to take a lot of my income away, and he's going to give it to people who, quote, don't even pay taxes. And I think we all know what's involved or what can be subsumed in that characterization of some people.
What about the people who say, and this a little disturbs me, but what about the people who say that the only reason John McCain could win, the only way he could win is about race? I would think that's a bit unfair. Do you agree that's unfair?
I think John McCain has an appeal beyond being the white guy in a white-black contest. And I think that the Republican Party has a following that's broader than people who would choose automatically the white guy.
And there are legitimate questions about Barack Obama. Joe Biden, when he referenced that calamity that's going
to happen. This is great. Let's listen to a little of Joe Biden endorsing his running mate, Barack Obama.
Mark my words. It will not be 6 months before the world tests Barack Obama like they did John Kennedy.
Okay, well, that probably is a great way to raise, you know, questions, raise people's fears. Joe Biden, we knew Joe Biden would always be a worry for Barack Obama because he does have this tendency to talk on and on and like he's in this podcast, and he has a tendency to say things he really shouldn't get into, like talking about a renewal of international crises and the testing of the untested Barack Obama.
Right away.
He's like nuts, but there he is out there doing it.
Now, we always talk about this record amount of money that's going to Barack Obama, and we don't know everybody who's giving him money. Do we think, though, that the McCain campaign is giving money to Biden at this point to say these things?
They want to make sure he keeps getting heard.
Every time he says something, you always think of McCain or Palin saying, I'm
John McCain, and I approve this message.
Then you hear Joe Biden.
Look, I think, though, that the experience issue, the idea that he's not tested enough, the Republicans seem to have moved somewhat beyond that. Colin Powell attacked it in his endorsement.
Yes.
And that, I think, laid to rest the salience, at least, of that argument. We'll still hear the argument, but it doesn't have quite the same bite.
I think people nervous about Barack Obama, establishment people, regarding the military experience, They watched Colin Powell there. I think the credibility of Colin Powell had been under attack, assault from many on the left the last couple of years, obviously, since the UN speech where he...
Well, from the center as well. I mean, you don't have to be a leftist to think Colin Powell got hung out to dry in front of the United Nations making the case for the weapons of mass destruction that proved not to be there.
Right. I mean, perhaps he was used by the administration, but his credibility was gone. And having said that, I think watching him on Meet the Press, not so much what he said endorsing Barack Obama, but his criticism of John McCain, his judgment, and the Republican Party's...
Huge free shot.
Went on forever.
In the case of Mr. McCain, I found that he was a little unsure as to how to deal with the economic problems that we were having. And almost every day there was a different approach to the problem.
I think, though, that the Colin Powell endorsement probably, like anything else in the last couple of weeks, gets priced into the market pretty quickly. It's not as though you're going to see a swelling, wow, I saw that Colin Powell statement. I mean, I think it was moving, in fact. I thought it was a remarkable and eloquent case for the Democrats, better than I've heard from any Democrat, really. But in the end, it's seen as just another endorsement, and I think to some degree it's discounted because of the animus that Colin Powell has against the direction the Republican Party's been going.
True, but the stuff we were talking about a few minutes ago, when we were talking about the experience factor and Obama's lack of same, having a Colin Powell endorse him, perhaps, as you say, puts that to rest.
There is a certain amount of polling that suggests that some of the other lines of attack that the campaign has used against Obama, the William Ayers connection or lack of connection, or the crossed paths with William Ayers and the Jeremiah Wright all those years sitting in the church of this
Acorn.
Radical pastor, his having been an attorney at one time on a case for Acorn and obviously having some shared goals with Acorn in terms of voter registration and so on, all of that does not seem to have amounted to much unless what we're seeing is a nonspecific movement back towards McCain among independents making under $50,000, white males, people who used to identify with the Republican Party and got mad. They're drifting back to McCain.
But if you get rid of the Ayers argument and the Wright arguments and you focus only on the fact that Barack Obama is going to tax you, I think that could bring back those moderates and independents that he has lost by really appealing to the base of the party, which he didn't have to begin with. I mean, obviously, he suffered on both accounts. He didn't have the base until he got Sarah Palin, but then by getting Sarah Palin, he moved to the right on a bunch of issues, and he hurt his stead with independents.
Okay, you bring up Sarah Palin. Is she just a maverick, or what's going on here? She's kind of begun to chart her own course, has she not, as a vice presidential nominee?
I think she gave a very interesting interview with
third grader.
Yeah.
He asked her what a vice president does.
That they run the Senate, and it's kind of...
She's in charge
of the Senate.
I'm going to be in charge of the Senate. Yeah. That's an interesting idea. Yeah. Interesting to think of anyone being in charge of the Senate, actually. So she's out there disagreeing with him on Jeremiah Wright, saying maybe we ought to go after Jeremiah Wright a little bit more.
Pakistan?
Disagreeing with him on Pakistan,
going after Jeremiah Wright in Pakistan.
That would have been a good way to meld those two issues,
exactly.
You know, bringing them together, the power of two, synergy. Also, she said, we shouldn't have dropped out of Michigan.
I want to get back to Michigan, and I want to try.
Hey, you know what? I think a lot of people agree with her on that one, on both sides of the aisle. She also had a difference of opinion with the candidate on North Korea, coming off the list of terrorist countries.
Condoleezza Rice, of course, having worked on this strategy for quite some time, I have faith in her. They're making this wise decision.
And she sent a get well card to the president because she heard that Kim Jong was ill.
So right there, she was really marking her own sort of course, wasn't she? Is all of this calculated to just show that she's not Caribou Barbie, that she has a mind of her own, and that she's capable of setting policy if she should, God forbid, have to step into the unthinkable role of replacing a president who is incapacitated?
So,
hey, but you know what we did learn this week?
What's that?
Patriotism becoming a big issue in the late stages of this campaign. You had McCain advisors say he wasn't going to do well in Northern Virginia, but he would do well in the real Virginia. That was something the campaign had to apologize for. Then we had Sarah Palin talking about going only to those parts of the country that were pro-America.
That's not good enough. We do have two members of Congress who have said some interesting things.
Beyond saying I'm only going to campaign for people who are pro-America?
Oh, Michelle Bachmann from the 6th Congressional District of Minnesota, Republican freshman, won a close race, a Republican seat, but more conservative than the district had been, I believe.
Is this Ramstad's district?
No,
Jim Ramstad's district?
Not Ramstad, because Ramstad's still there. The one who ran for the Senate, who gave it, Mark Kennedy.
That's right.
It
was Mark Kennedy. Right. I'm sorry.
And she said something like,
What I would say is that the news media should do a penetrating expose and take a look. I wish they would. I wish the American media would take a great look at the views of the people in Congress and find out, are they pro-America or anti-America? I think people would love to see an expose like that.
Now, she says that she was baited on this by the next senator from Pennsylvania, Chris Matthews, right?
Yeah. You heard that here first, folks, and perhaps last.
That's right, yes. Exactly. And she regrets doing that. But I don't think she actually, one, I don't think she apologized.
I mean, she regrets going on Chris Matthews' show.
But again, that created a race that did not exist. I mean, she was supposed to sail to reelection.
Well, now, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Are you telling me that she was going to defeat the juggernaut of Elwin Tinkleberry?
The third? No, his name is... No, wait, his name is Tinklenberg.
I'm sorry, yeah. Elwin Tinklenberg.
Yeah.
Much better name. And I understand he's really quite hot now. There are $1 million finding their way into his district.
That's what he said. He said that since she has gone on Hardball, he's gotten $1 million, and now there are some ratings organizations that have called this race a toss-up, too close to call.
Toss-up. Yeah. I'm not sure all the ratings people have been quite so sanguine about his chances. But, all right, let's say at least Michelle Bachmann has bought herself a race.
Mm-hmm. Also, Robin Hayes, a congressman from North Carolina, talked about whether liberals hate real America or not. And again, he won by only 329 votes in 2006. He has a tough rematch. But again,
but can I ask you, how many liberals are there in Robin Hayes' district? 329? Is he really going to suffer? Is he going to lose now? Your prediction, Ken.
I predict he loses.
Really?
The reason I think, because Larry Kissel, or Kissel, I think it's Kissel, who he lost by 329 votes in 2006 without any money. The DCCC have thrown in over $1 million on his campaign. They really, I think Hayes is in trouble.
So Robin Hayes is in more trouble than Michelle Bachmann because her district's a little more secure and she didn't have as strong a candidate
that's
running against her, unless you, of course, happen to be Elwin Tinkleberg. Let's get back to talking about the future of the Republican Party, Ken, because I think this is a subject of some fascination for the listener. This new Republican Party...
Which begins on November 5th.
November 5th. If there is not a president-elect McCain...
I think either way, there's a new Republican Party.
Oh, you think even if there is a president-elect McCain, he's not the leader of it?
No, he's not. Not at 72.
Oh, that is a fascinating question. So you think they start the succession fight immediately?
They do, because even if he wins, there is still going to be a coup d'etat in the House...
My goodness.
Yeah, I think Boehner and Blunt are gone. I think the new folks, the Eric
Cantors...
This
would be John Boehner and Roy Blunt, right? Who are currently the
minority
leader and minority whip in
respectively.
The House. Respectively. And number one and number two. Right. Numeros uno.
Can I just tell you a great statistic here? This will be the first time, assuming there's going to be a double-digit loss of Republican House seats.
20 at this point.
It's the first time since the 1930s that the Republicans have gone two cycles in a row losing double digits in House seats.
Well, of course, there were 40 years in there where they had kind of a minimal number of seats. It would have been pretty tough for them to lose from that low base. They were down well under 190 for much of 40 years. But we could see them lose and go back below 190. At this point, maybe 180, 185 looks like a pretty likely number for them.
They can't have double-digit losses in 2006
and survive. No, they barely survived really last time.
Right.
There was a weak attempt to oust them, but this time I think they will genuinely
go. Yeah.
Yes. So... The leadership does not come from Congress, certainly not going to come from a weakened Republican minority in the Senate. So Sarah Palin obviously stakes some claim
Newt
to
Gingrich.
Being the successoress. And, of course, we then have to talk about Newt
Gingrich.
Yes. Now, Newt Gingrich has been gone for exactly 10 years.
Right.
He was defenestrated and, worse yet, thrown out the window right after the Republicans lost seats in the 1998 midterm.
When he made the argument that Bill Clinton's conduct was the issue that Americans cared about. And obviously, when the Democrats picked up seats in 98, they did not, and he was gone.
I think they actually were eager to be rid of Newt before that. There was an attempted coup d'etat against him in 1997,
right.
Which barely failed.
Right.
And I think Newt was probably a goner, and they had a convenient excuse in the disappointing election. But you know, Newt has done an interesting thing in this intervening decade. He has never disappeared. He's been out there raising money for various organizations. He's been campaigning sometimes for people, but mostly he's been
new ideas.
On television.
Yeah, new ideas.
Yes, new ideas, such as... No, just pick two or three of his best. No, I mean, seriously, just you have to narrow it down. Just a few. Just give me two. And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/elections.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin, in the same room as Ron Elving for the first time in a long time.
It's good to have you here, Ken.
I missed you, Ron.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR News. I can't think of any new ideas, he said. Can you?
No.
Oh, yes. Newt Gingrich for president.